Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, August 27th, 2018. A final peace deal is expected to be signed in Khartoum today, but will it resolve all the outstanding issues like the number of states and their borders?
It has been a very tedious process, a very difficult one. But eventually, I think after a very tough time and tough negotiations, parties have really reached to some sort of compromise.
And oil production resumes at facilities in the former Unity State.
This button will not be stopped. It will continue to produce oil and oil and oil.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Parties at the peace talks in the Sudanese capital Khartoum are expected to initial the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, or ARCSIS, at some point tonight. But delegates say although progress was made on certain issues, they still have not reached agreement on the number of states or their boundaries. One delegate at the talks confirmed to this program that the issue has been referred to the IGAD heads of state. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Rita Lopidia, a member of the South Sudan Women's Coalition, says after the resumption of talks 2 days ago, parties could not agree on Article 4 because each party insisted on its previous position regarding states and their boundaries.
The parties, opposition, including the government, they have not agreed on some of these articles that are being introduced. That's why it is being referred to the IGAD head of states to look into it. And a letter has been drafted by the special envoy today, and we had copies of it. This is what will be presented to the Ethiopian Foreign Ministry to look into that and raise it with the heads of states.
Lopidia says the parties, however, did make progress on other contentious issues, including the responsibility of the first vice president, naming of the new 5 ministries and the National Constitution Review Commission, and issues related to judiciary reforms. She says a revitalized deal should be initial by all parties tonight.
These issues have been ironed out, and right now it is the final touches. It's being done on the final draft of the revitalized agreement, and we hope around 7 tonight the document or the revitalized ARCSIS will be initialized by the parties tonight.
Lopidia acknowledged that despite the challenges the parties faced during the latest round of peace talks, all the parties have shown a commitment to achieving lasting peace in the country. She says the warring parties must end the suffering of innocent women and children now.
It has been a very tedious process, a very difficult one. But eventually, I think after a very tough time and tough negotiations, parties have really reached to some sort of compromise to get to where it is today. But still, a lot of work needs to be done because from my own point of view, there is still a need to build trust among the parties.
Since this afternoon, parties have been meeting behind doors and consulting with one another as they await to see the draft from the IGAD Secretariat. Lopidia says if the parties initial the deal tonight, the next 2 days will be a time for them to work on the implementation matrix, which will include the pre-transitional security arrangement. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
A spokesman for the SPLM-IO says the group is eager to end the war and the suffering of its people. But Mabior Gereng de Mabior, chair of the SPLM-IO National Committee for Information, says the government has not been negotiating in good faith. Mabior tells VOA's James Buddy that the war could end this week if there was a real commitment from the South Sudan government.
Well, it has been a very confusing peace process for many people. And I can only tell you what we know as the facts. Right now, we are dealing with Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 of the revitalized ISIS, and we will wait for IGAD to give us direction on what we are going to do with the rest of the chapters. But if a situation arises where we only deal with Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 and we sign an agreement and go to Juba, then this would be really a new agreement and it will not be a revitalized ISIS. And we are fully committed to what is happening in Khartoum in the context of the greater IGAD peace process, and we will continue to negotiate in good faith.
Mr. Mambio, before I even go further, I do follow the crisis in South Sudan, and just listening to you, I seem to be very confused. So let me ask just one basic question. The revitalization that is starting this week in Khartoum, is that a continuation of the process that was being carried on by the former Botswana president, Mohai, or is the one now being taken over by President Bashir and Museveni? Is that process different from the one that was being conducted by Mohai?
I think this question is better directed to the IGAD, but according to what we understand, we know that what is happening in Khartoum is part of the greater IGAD peace process, and we don't understand it as a separate process by President Museveni and President Bashir. Countries, of course, have national interests, and of course, every country will want to work according to what is in their national interest. That is just politics. But what we do know is that this is an IGAD peace process, and we are committed to that. And if it comes to something else, then we will see if that comes to something else. We get our direction from IGAD.
So going into this week, Khartoum revitalization, have you all been able to resolve the issue of, say, the sharing of powers between President Salva Kiir and your leader, Riek Machar?
No, these are the contentious issues that are now going to start this week. I don't want to preempt the process and talk about it, but these are some of the agendas that are supposed to be finalized.
So there are a whole lot of grievances that are yet to be resolved.
Yes, that is correct.
And the issue also, the number of states in the country,
yeah,
that has also not been resolved.
It has not been resolved, but of course it is clear in the collapsed ISIS that it was based on 10 states. Of course, we want to end the war and the suffering of our people, so we have been as flexible as we possibly can, you know, and so we continue to negotiate in good faith with the regime because it is our belief that it is only through dialogue that we will be able to resolve the problem. But legally speaking, it is very clear what should happen.
Mr. Mabio, there are a whole lot of people in South Sudan and around Africa and the rest of the world who are thinking and are hoping that finally this week, you and the government in Juba are finally going to sign an agreement that can put this issue to rest. Are they being too over-optimistic?
It's good to be optimistic, but we must also be realistic. When we talk about peace in South Sudan, we must talk about peace in South Sudan in the context of the laws that are going to govern the peace, which is what the negotiations are about. And so in order for us to continue negotiating, for us to reconcile, will take time. But the war can end if there's a will from the government.
That is SPLM-IO spokesman Mabior Garang de Mabior speaking with VOA's James Buddy. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, who is in Washington, D.C. this week to meet with U.S. President Donald Trump, says he and other leaders of the regional group IGAD are committed to ensuring that peace and stability return to South Sudan.
We are committed to working together with our regional brothers and sisters to ensure that peace and stability returns to South Sudan. And we will try anything that will achieve that. Because for most of us in the region, our greatest concern is not about the leadership of the country, but to ensure that the people of South Sudan, who have had to endure untold suffering for many years after struggling to achieve their independence, are able to achieve the fruits that they struggled for when they sought to liberate themselves. And this is what Kenya is committed to. This is what I believe our colleagues in the region are committed to, and we will try everything. And we must, therefore, put our hope and faith and continue to put pressure on the leadership of South Sudan from all sides, that it is their ultimate responsibility to ensure they come together and find a framework that works to restore peace and stability and ultimately human dignity to the people of South Sudan.
That is Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking in an exclusive interview with VOA's Esther Githui Ewart in Washington. South Sudan has resumed producing oil in the former Unity State, which was suspended when fighting quickly spread to that area shortly after the conflict began in late 2013. South Sudan's petroleum minister says the government will produce 45,000 barrels a day in blocks 1, 2, and 4 in the Toma oil fields. Munyang David Mayor reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Olgatkwa says the government turned on the oil taps on Saturday and dark crude oil began being pumped into pipelines again, nearly 5 years after production was shut down due to clashes between government and rival forces in the area. Speaking at the Toma South oil field on Saturday, where he personally turned on production facilities, Gatkwa said the resumption in oil production marks a new beginning for South Sudan.
This button will not be stopped. It will continue to produce oil and oil and oil. We have now resumed the production officially in Toma South. We will be producing 45,000 barrels a day gross, and we will be sending it to Ichlich. And my team, the Ministry of Petroleum of the Republic of South Sudan, GPOC, they will be here in Toma South working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to make sure that the production is not interrupted.
The government suspended oil production at Toma South and several other oil fields in the area in early 2014 when it was too dangerous to continue operations while government and opposition forces battled for the control of the oil fields. Some of the oil facilities were also said to be damaged during the fighting. Gatkwa says the government engineers are working with oil companies to ensure that oil fields in the former Unity State area are safely reopened.
The work is just starting. We have put into production Toma South. We are going to El Nar, El Tor, Manga, Unity. Together, all of us, nobody's going to be left behind. GPOC, you take a lead, the rest will follow.
At the time South Sudan seceded from Sudan in 2011, oil production was at a peak of 350,000 barrels per day. In early 2012, South Sudan suspended oil production following clashes between Sudanese and South Sudanese forces in Ijlich. When Juba resumed oil production in April 2013, after agreeing with Sudan to resume cross-border oil flows, output dropped to 245,000 barrels per day, which continued until civil war broke out in December 2013. South Sudan currently produces 130,000 barrels per day from oil fields in former Upper Nile State. That drop in oil production, together with the continuing conflict, has crippled the country's economy. Hel Ahzari Abdel Gadir, the Sudanese oil and gas minister, who witnessed the taps being turned back on over the weekend, says it is not too late for South Sudan to regain what it lost during the oil shutdown. But he says that will only happen if peace returns to South Sudan.
This is based, actually, on the initiative that has been taken by our president, al-Bashir, to his brother, President of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, to bring peace into the country and to bring the opinions closer and closer so people can live in peace. And that has happened. And this is a product of that. And I can tell everyone, such products can be more and more if this peace perseveres and if we are determined to really continue to make sure that we nourish it and make sure that it continues.
The resumption of oil production follows a ceasefire and power-sharing agreement that President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar and other rebel groups signed in Khartoum. South Sudan pays Sudan $25 per barrel for exporting its crude oil through Sudan and for using the Sudanese facilities, including refineries and pipelines, according to the 2012 cooperation agreement. The audio used in this story was provided by the press unit at the Petroleum Ministry. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we'll have more on what Minister Gatkwa has to say about the country's uptick in oil production when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today,
Have you ever lent money to a friend who did not pay back? How did you handle that situation?
They never return, and I also give up because I want to maintain the friendship. Because our friendship was not monetary. It is a social friendship that it was not meant to involve in economics.
Very often than not, yes. But most of the times, if a friend asks me to lend them money, I would only give it to them if I'm willing to give it to them. Otherwise, if I'm not willing to give them that amount of money, I'll tell them I don't have it.
Actually, it has happened, but it's not very easy to borrow someone who is not your friend. So someone who is my friend, I decided we remain friends, but not on money issues.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As we reported just before the break, South Sudan has resumed the production of oil in Ruang State and Northern Leech State, according to Minister of Petroleum Ezekiel Loth Gatkwoth. He tells INBR the resumption will be a big boost to South Sudan's economy.
Well, definitely you can translate this into money, because currently now the barrel is $73, $72 a barrel. So you can translate this into money. And definitely just this is the beginning, because these blocks, they are capable of producing 120,000 barrels a day. So if you add this into the production that we are having now in the country, 145,000 barrels a day, this is a big boost for the economy of the country.
Are you worried at all that the ongoing conflict could hinder some of the plans that you have with the continuing of oil production in South Sudan?
Not at all, because the oil installations in the whole country and the oil fields are protected by the army and the national police and the national security. They are protecting this. And also we have an agreement with Sudan to have a joint security forces to protect all the oil installations in South Sudan and also in Sudan. So we will be working together with Sudan to make sure that the oil installations are protected.
Now, I'm speaking to you in Dubai International Airport. I hear that you're on your way to China. Could you tell us what your plans are in China?
Well, definitely, yes, I am on my way to China. CNPC, you know, they are heavily investing in the oil in the Republic of South Sudan, together with Petronas of Malaysia and ONGC of India. They are heavily investing in South Sudan. I'm going to be together with my president, General Salva Kiir Mayardit, because there is a summit that we will be attending, Forum for China-Africa Cooperation, and we will be attending this. While I'm there, we will be having an agreement with the CNPC. This is the National Petroleum Corporation of China. To explore more blocks in the Republic of South Sudan. They will be investing more and more into the country. You know, 70% of the country is not explored. Only 30% of the country is explored, and we have a proven reserve of 3.5 billion barrels.
Now, Sudan has taken an integral role in the peace process. How have they influenced what's going on right now in the ministry?
Well, definitely, even yesterday when I was launching the production, the Minister of Petroleum and Gas of the Republic of Sudan, Mr. Hazari Abdullah, he was there. They are providing technical support and logistical support to the operation, and we're working very closely. We have been visiting the field more than four times now, and when I was launching yesterday, he was there supporting me. And the role of Sudan now, to me, is actually constructive, and they are really engaging us to make sure that the rehabilitation of the two economies are realized, the economy of the Republic of South Sudan and the economy of the Republic of Sudan. We are working together, and this is going to be benefiting not only South Sudan, but the Sudan.
That was Ezekiel Lol Gatkwoth, South Sudan's Minister of Petroleum, speaking to my colleague Ayan Deng Bior from Dubai. An opposition political party in Juba says the government should have put in place measures to protect the environment before resuming oil production. The head of the United South Sudan Party says Juba did nothing in the past to protect the environment or the people living around the production sites. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
United South Sudan Party Chairman Paulino Lokudu Obede says resuming oil production in Toma oil field of Rang Estate will help the economy, but with that resumption should come environmental standards and regulations that protect the people and land in the former Unity Estate.
It is a positive step toward recovering the grave level economy where we are in currently. And United South Sudan Party would like to urge the ministries of environment, health, petroleum, plus other petroleum companies currently working in the oil fields to be serious this time about the life of the people in oil production areas without delay, to lay out the fundamental and realistic and protection environmental measures to protect the lives of the people and the animals in oil producing areas.
South Sudan has been producing 130,000 barrels per day, but that amount should rise significantly with the resumption of oil production at Toma. Obede says while he embraces more production, he and other members of the party do want to see more environmental pollution at the oil fields.
The pollution over those areas will be highly affected than the previous years. And over the past years, there have been alarming reports of the environmental pollution in Thorjat and in other oil-affected areas near Thorjat.
A German lobbying group called Sign of Hope released a report on oil pollution in South Sudan last April, indicating more than 600,000 people were at a high risk of painful and horrible early deaths in the oil-producing areas of the country. The report cited dangerously high levels of substances such as barium and lead, which had leaked into the water sources for people and animals living in and around the Thorjat oil fields. The same organization published a report in May 2014, which indicated increased infertility in women and a high number of miscarriages, severe eye pain, eye infections, and even blindness in some cases. Many skin abnormalities were also detected. Obede says the government should have first addressed this and other problems as matter of priority before resuming oil production in the Toma oil fields.
The environment must be protected and the people's lives must be protected. This is the number one agenda supposed to happen before producing.
And this time around, says Obede, oil proceeds should not end up in the hands of few corrupt South Sudanese officials, but should instead go directly to local communities, which increased health risk as a result of air and water pollution caused by the stepped-up oil production. 2 weeks ago, Ministry of Environment officials in Juba said they were concerned about reports of environmental pollution caused by oil spills at an oil well in Northern Lekki State. Northern Lekki State Information Minister Lam Tongwar told South Sudan in Focus that oil well number 50 was leaking a substantial amount of dangerous chemicals into the ground, which was endangering the lives of local residents. Petroleum Ministry officials in Juba said they were working with the oil extracting companies to address the problem, but did not elaborate on what, if any, fines would be paid by the oil companies or how the government or oil companies would help local residents address their health issues. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont is urging President Trump to press the Kyr administration to free South Sudanese arbitrarily detained by the national security. Leahy said last week there's a pattern of abuse by security agents who arrest journalists, U.N. staff, and business leaders like Kerbina Wool, who was detained in March. Gerain Michael, coordinator of the local nonprofit The Nile Foundation, which was founded by Wool, says Wool's arrest has hurt the group's operations.
He was arrested on 27th of April, 2018. Today marks exactly 4 months since he was detained. For the last 2 years that I've worked with Kerbino, I've not known him to be someone that is, you know, engaged in politics or try to be connected to the political factions that are the key players in the current conflict in the country. Kerbino Wall has zero political affiliation. Just to be clear,
what kind of business is Kerbina Wool doing in South Sudan?
He has a number of interests. Basically, his main business is security, private security, that is man guarding and other security solutions. His company employed over 1,000 South Sudanese, and his other businesses include hospitality and insurance and so many other interests.
When he was summoned and detained 4 months ago by the national security, what did the authorities say was the reason for arresting him?
He was summoned to the office of the national security, just like any other, you know, citizen. If you are called by the authorities, you have to respond. So he went there himself. He was not picked up. And when he arrived, that when we were informed immediately that he has been locked up.
When was the last time you spoke to him after he was locked up?
I have not been able to meet him, although representatives of his family at some point have had access, but it's very rare. It is not a regular one. It is once in a while.
What are the authorities in South Sudan saying about the arrest of Carbino?
No official communication has been made with regards to his arrest. We only, you know, hear rumors here and there, but we don't want to give these rumors a credit.
What is the main work of Carbino's company?
Car Security offers main guarding services, like, you know, providing security guards to the NGOs, diplomatic missions, as well as local businesses. It also provides advanced technology, you know, for NGOs in terms of security gadgets.
It's my understanding that Carbino has a local non-governmental organization helping a lot of youth in capacity building. Could you tell us more about that?
The Nile Foundation was established with the conviction that giving youth an opportunity by building their capacities and empowering them. The Nile Foundation has benefited, to my understanding, around 1,500 in the last 2 years that it has been active through trainings and donations and a lot of activities. With all this, Carbino has always maintained his advocacy of youth empowerment to focus on social economic skills.
If you were given an opportunity to speak to authorities in Juba about Carbino's continued detention, what would you tell them?
There's a lot of rumors that is going on, and I'm sure that our government has policies and a system in how it can handle, you know, all the cases. Carbino's case, to me, I think he doesn't deserve to be in there because he has not done anything. Even if he has done anything, there are also due process that has to be followed. For us, I think it is very important that someone like him should not be in jail because he has not done anything.
That's Greg Michael, coordinator of the Nile Foundation, speaking from Nairobi with John Tanza earlier today.
The 12 applicants, their applications for bail is allowed. Set further conditions so that they don't have to wait in the courtroom. Each of them is to execute a non-cash bond in the sum of 5 million shillings.
That was Justice Stephen Mubiru in the Ugandan town of Gulu today, granting bail to lawmaker Robert Chiagulani and 11 others charged with treason. Chiagulani, better known as pop star Bobby Wine, appeared in court on crutches and looked frail. Supporters say he and some of the others were beaten while jailed. The 12 defendants were arrested 2 weeks ago after protesters threw rocks at President Yoweri Museveni's motorcade at a by-election campaign event. Finally, Ambassador Princeton Lyman, who served as U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan from March 2011 to March 2013, died on Friday. As Special Envoy, he led U.S. policy in helping the implementation of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement. Ambassador Lyman was adjunct professor of Georgetown University and at Johns Hopkins School for Advanced International Studies. His previous career in government included assignments as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs and Director of Refugee programs. Ambassador Lyman will be missed by this program and others who ever worked with him. And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song No More War by Ross Corby.
Well, just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution. And must be a conclusion. Sure! Rastafari, just stop the war. No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today. They're trying to find a solution.
We look around and nowhere to hide. Not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world without love? So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances.
We've been listening to Ross Corby with the song No More War. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun down. And even times, the rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart? No more war in Africa. The people that are